It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine a potential new line of defense against sexually transmitted infections, a dose of the antibiotic doxycycline taken soon after sex to lower the risk of contracting common STIs like chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis. Call in with a question or comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Shira Heisler is medical director of the Detroit Public Health STD Clinic and an assistant professor in Wayne State University's Division of Infectious Diseases. Dr. Heisler, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, tell us about this antibiotic. What is doxycycline?
So doxycycline is part of the class of antibiotics that we use for a lot of different infections. And it is currently, it's part of the guidelines for an alternative treatment for syphilis. Currently, we're in a national shortage of bicillin, and it's also used for treatment of chlamydia. So that's how it's traditionally used in the STI world. And now there's about three different studies that have suggested that if you use a dose of 200 milligrams one time, ideally within 24 hours after having sex, only within 72 hours, it can reduce syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea significantly.
It seems like this antibiotic, which apparently has been around for a long time, it seems quite versatile. Like, it's useful in a number of medical areas or situations. Do you find that that is the case?
Yeah, I mean, doxycycline, it's used for soft tissue infections. Yes, it is it has a broad spectrum of coverage. So yes, it is used in a lot of different avenues, which is the concern of using doxy-PEP, is that there's going to be a concern is that it's going to increase resistance. And then for other infections, including STIs, will it still work? That's kind of the concern in doxy-PEP.
So you mentioned these studies. How effective is a small dose of doxycycline? Also, as you mentioned, doxy-PEP called that as well, for preventing STIs.
Yeah, so I first want to be clear. All these studies were specifically in men having sex with men and transgender women. And that is because they disproportionately account for all STIs, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. So the goal was to do it in this specific narrow group because they're holding the highest burden. In terms of what we saw, so in 2018, there was a study, the IPERGATE trial. This was actually for HIV PrEP, but there was a sub-study, and that showed decrease of chlamydia by 70% and syphilis by 73%. Then in 2021, which was the main trial of truly doxy-PEP, trying this out, this showed in HIV negative folks a decrease of chlamydia and syphilis by 87%.
Wow.
In HIV positive folks, 75%, and a decrease in gonorrhea, 55%. Which was actually quite surprising. We did not, doxycycline has known resistance to gonorrhea. It was quite surprising that it had any effect. And then another study, a French study called DoxyVac, showed very similar results that showed decrease in chlamydia by 88%, decrease in syphilis by 87%, and decrease in gonorrhea by 51%. So these are pretty amazing results.
Dr. Shira Heisler with us, medical director of the Detroit Public Health STD Clinic, as we talk about the prevention of sexually transmitted infections and a focus right now with researchers on doxy-PEP or doxycycline, the antibiotic. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You mentioned the study looking specifically at gay men, the transgender community. As what I understand from the trials, though, women are not having the same effect with the antibiotics. What do you see there?
So there was one trial. There's still ongoing trials. There was one trial that was done in a country in Africa, and it was amongst women who were on PrEP. And it didn't show these results. Why? We're not sure. Was it adherence? Is it that the cervical tissue is very different than anal and urethral tissue, right? And how maybe 72 hours is just too long for it to protect the cervical tissue. Maybe 24 hours would work. Maybe it's adherence. We don't know. There are now more trials going on. But as of now, there isn't any data to suggest that it does work in cisgender women.
And you, I understand, have been prescribing DoxyPep at your clinic for the past 7 months. Who are you typically recommending receiving the antibiotic?
So this is a great question. And kind of right now we're waiting on CDC guidelines to come out. And so different clinics across the country are doing it slightly differently. What I do is any patient, a man who has sex with men or transgender women, if they have had any STI within the past 2 years, or they're just considered truly at higher risk, so they're engaging in chem sex or group sex or multiple partners, those are people that we are recommending it to. And what's really kind of exciting is that the uptake is really, really high. People are really excited about it, which is a really encouraging thing that this could actually be an intervention that could really work and affect the actual population that this is disproportionately affecting.
I think it's also important to note how serious these sexually transmitted infections can become if left untreated. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So syphilis. So I think the thing that is really important to understand right now is that we are in an epidemic of STIs. Our numbers of syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea are all significantly on the rise. And in particular in syphilis, there is significant negative sequelae that could happen, right? It could enter the central nervous system. You can have meningitis. You can have ocular syphilis affecting the eyes, leading to permanent blindness. You can have otic syphilis leading to permanent hearing loss. There is true, and we are seeing increased cases of these really severe negative outcomes. And this would be a way, again, to curb it.
You mentioned the CDC and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They recently had a comment period on proposed mm-hmm. guidelines for the use of DoxyPep. And I'm just wondering, what is the federal public health role here in this emerging avenue, if you will, for preventing the infection spread?
Great question. I feel really comfortable to prescribe DoxyPep, but I am deep in the STI world. If we get CDC guidelines, people on the front lines in primary care would feel more comfortable and have more guidance on how to do it. And the more people that we get on it, we'll see the greater effect. And so I think that this would allow and give a huge range of providers way more comfort and guidance on how to do it and to feel comfortable doing it.
Do you think that the CDC is moving quickly on DoxyPep?
I think, you know, that's a good question. I feel they're in a kind of maybe tougher boat, right? Like everyone looks to their guidelines. I would like to see them out. You know, we've now had this data around February. So I really hope that this is coming out soon. They did give this primary guidelines that, you know, within the past 2 months or so for everyone to comment on. And now hopefully we'll see it coming out soon.
Dr. Shira Heisler is medical director of the Detroit Public Health STD Clinic, as we learn about the antibiotic doxycycline being used to try to prevent the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. You can add your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore a growing body of research around the antibiotic doxycycline and its potential to lower the risk of contracting sexually transmitted diseases with a preventative treatment under study. It's called DoxyPep. Call in with a question or share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Dr. Shira Heisler with us, medical director of the Detroit Public Health STD Clinic. Dr. Heisler, in particular with syphilis in Wisconsin, cases of syphilis rose 19% between 2021 and 2022. What segments of the population are suffering the most from the spread of syphilis?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm more familiar with what's going on in Michigan, but I would imagine that it is mirrored in other places. So what we see is consistently, unfortunately, men who have sex with men disproportionately account for cases of syphilis. And I want to be extra clear here. In syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea, there is no pathologic, physiologic, biological reason why that is. It is because they share the same sexual networks. This is a disparity that we can address and change. In Michigan in particular, even though men having sex with men disproportionately account for the total cases, the rise in heterosexual men and women having sex with men, the rate has gone up significantly. And we have seen there is, as CDC came out within the past couple weeks, about how congenital syphilis is a national crisis. In the state of Michigan in 2021, we had around 40 some cases of congenital syphilis, three were stillborns, so which is a totally preventable thing. So we clearly have a problem that is affecting all different groups. It isn't just gay men, but they do hold the highest burden of cases.
What is the stigma like now with having an STI?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I also work doing HIV work, and I was at an STI conference, and, you know, someone said, and I maybe would agree, that maybe the stigma is even higher in STIs, unfortunately. Yes, I think that that's part of our work, is to reduce stigma. And I will say, in my HIV work, in my STI work, my biggest thing that I'm fighting is stigma, is internalized homophobia. And I think that, you know, so many people, I've had recently a lot of new HIV diagnoses in the heterosexual population, men and women, and so many of them are like, but I'm not gay, but I'm not gay. And it's like the understanding that this is, HIV doesn't care if you're Black, if you're white, if you're gay, if you're straight. It can penetrate in different locations easier. But I would say that I think the biggest work of all of the people involved in this is decreasing the stigma. And that is a powerful fight that we need to do, and it's very difficult.
When you take the case of antibiotics in the fight against the spread of sexually transmitted infections, I mean, would people who do contract an STI eventually need an antibiotic to get on an antibiotic anyway for treatment?
Yes. So you definitely kind of, if you're on DoxyPep, that's a good question. So part of the protocol is, if you are taking DoxyPep and you get an STI, you're positive for it because you should get testing every 3 months, you treat as per CDC guidelines. So you stop the DoxyPep. You shouldn't be having sex while you have an active infection. You take the prescribed course of the regular treatment and then can go back on it.
Okay. How concerned are clinicians that, you know, regularly use DoxyPep that it could lead to antibiotic resistance for particular patients?
There is very high concern for resistance, and it is legitimate concern. Antibiotic resistance is a big problem. We see with gonorrhea, we already had a few cases in Massachusetts of it being resistant to ceftriaxone. And so this could increase resistance 100%. However, when I kind of get that question in relating to DoxyPep, My feeling is, as you said earlier on, we're using doxycycline for many different things. And so now we have a known intervention that works with amazing data, decreasing chlamydia and syphilis by 87, 88% and gonorrhea by 50%. So when now that we have an intervention that specifically targets men who have sex with men, now we're going to say, well, resistance a problem and we're not going to offer it. That to me seems like this is what stigma looks like.
Mm.
And so I would really caution us to be like, yes, we need to acknowledge resistance is a problem. But we're still using the medication with all this other stuff. So why don't we use it here? And it could be a temporary solution, right? The whole thing is to curb STIs in this moment because they're so out of control.
What caused me pause when I read about one of the trials was stopped early because it was the results were so promising. It was so the control group could also have the antibiotic and start receiving it. I mean, that to me was that struck me by surprise that you would stop the trial and actually give the antibiotic as well to the control group not receiving it.
Yeah, because there's an ethical thing. The same thing happened with cabotegravir for PrEP and now an injectable form of prevention for HIV. And there's the ethical thing is we now see, I mean, if this is reducing chlamydia in syphilis by in the 80 percentiles, it would really be an ethical disservice to not offer this to everyone, which is really why we're wanting the CDC to push the CDC to get out guidelines so people feel comfortable to do this. This is just as all these other interventions, pre or post prophylaxis, the only way they work is if we take them. And so we need more people, more providers to be prescribing it.
Dr. Shira Heisler with us, medical director of the Detroit Public Health STD Clinic, as we talk about the prevention of sexually transmitted infections, new research on DoxyPep. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Dr. Heisler, how does DoxyPep as a treatment compare to the medication PrEP for preventing HIV infection?
It is very different.
Okay.
So first of all, HIV is a virus. The DoxyPep is an antibiotic treating bacteria. So that's different. And also for HIV PrEP, we're using HIV, partial HIV medication for PrEP or post-exposure prophylaxis. And here in DoxyPep, we're using an antibiotic that's used for a lot of other different things. Now, I do also want to be clear in, let's say, for chlamydia treatment or even syphilis treatment, because now we're giving doxycycline because we're trying to preserve our bicillin for pregnant women because we're in a national shortage. We are giving these antibiotics as treatment, which is a way longer course. So if we could now give this 200 milligram dose one time and prevent these longer courses of treatment, we could actually possibly be using the antibiotic less.
So this year's UC San Francisco study involving patients, as you mentioned, taking 200 milligrams of doxycycline within 3 days of having sex without condoms. If this treatment does become widely used and available, how could that affect strategies to reduce infections? How accessible could it be?
Great question. Well, first of all, doxycycline is very cheap. So that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how we do it in making it accessible is, so first of all, I work at a public health STD clinic that's fully funded by the state health department. So we get medications for treatment of all STIs. They now give all clinics in the state who ask for it. We now have bottles for people who don't have insurance to give them DoxyPep. So one of the things that I do want it, which I didn't mention earlier, is, as I said, it disproportionately affects men having sex with men. It disproportionately affects Black men who have sex with men and transgender women. And so one of the things is I'm hoping, as you know, I live and work in Detroit, which is overwhelmingly Black, is to get it to this population. I do know it's very common. Many white gay men know all about DoxyPep. And then we see in the Black community, it's not really well known yet, and people don't know about it. So the key is spreading education, getting the CDC to come out with guidelines so we have something on a national scale to say, look, all these experts are agreeing with this, and to get it to the greater population, in particular, Black men having sex with men.
Dr. Heisler, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Shira Heisler, Medical Director of the Detroit Public Health STD Clinic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.